Hello again, Cousin Taurus. Your old friend Eric Francis here with your rune reading and a bit of a artifact reading. Just one artifact. One thing. But I have a story first. A story from the last approximately 5 minutes, and I am somewhat astonished, and well, or not, but let me tell you this and see what you think. As you know, maybe not, I have worked with A Course in Miracles on and off for about 30 years. I was introduced to the materials in 1986, and one thing I noticed about them, I've read every word, by the way, that was published officially as The Course in Miracles, probably anywhere between one and four times, so I'm quite familiar with the material. And one thing that stands out, if you're paying attention, is that there's no references to sex. And I was aware for some time that in the many staged process of going from the original channeling of A Course in Miracles, which came through a scribe named Helen Schuckman, who took the whole thing down thousands and thousands of pages in shorthand notebooks. She was a stenographer, among other things, and she scribed the work, and the work was typed into what became known as the unrevised manuscript, or in course terms, the UR manuscript. And I was aware that all references to sex had been taken out. I was not aware of anyone who had been particularly a student of that until last night, when I was doing some research in preparation for what may be, now may not be, but may be a new radio program for Pacifica Radio called The Miracle Hour. I'm not exactly an advocate of A Course in Miracles, but I have learned a lot from it, and I think it would be interesting to offer my commentaries, of which I have many. And so tonight, I found a PDF of the unrevised manuscript published by some guys in New Hampshire, because now the copyright is gone. It's been declared public domain, every bit of it, the whole thing. And found, first of all, the first reference to the notion that not only were there references to sex, but that the voice, presumably claimed to be that of Jesus, that's how the voice identifies itself, coming through Helen, is the actual personality of Jesus of Nazareth, states directly that the instructions about sex are to be included because they are of vital necessity to what the Course calls miracle workers. So I find this, and then I load it in the PDF. It takes a while to download, you know, the 2,000 pages or so, but started searching the word sex in the manuscript and found the affirmative statement that the only proper use of sex is for procreation. And continued to search the word in the unrevised manuscript of the textbook, and continued to find additional clarifications of that, but never basically veering from that position. Apparently, part of the controversy about sex was that one of the scribes, the typist, Helen Schuckman's boss, William Thetford, was gay. So Schuckman was the actual channel, if you accept that preposition, that idea, that she was not actually the author, that the author was using her as a vehicle. It would be an interesting point to discuss and debate. But in any event, let's just leave it at that. And Bill, the typist and the collaborator in the whole channeling process, which went on for 12 years, begins, by the way, in October of 1965 during the Uranus-Pluto conjunction, with the moon conjunct Uranus and Pluto. I just did the chart for the first day of channeling. And so it's Uranus, Pluto in Virgo, and the moon in Virgo. That because so much of the discussion was between Bill and Jesus, channeling through Helen, that they decided, and I'm not obviously not done with my research on this, but they removed all the references to sex, which apparently have a lot to say about why sex is to be used only for procreation, and that that indiscriminate sexual impulses are the same as indiscriminate miracle impulses, and so on and so on. And it is taking basically a purist position. Now, I didn't know what position I would have thought it might take, but the finished manuscript, the published one, called the Second Edit, I believe, is a commentary, for the most part, on special love, specialness. And there is a... okay, the concept of specialness is love that excludes, choosing certain people for certain purposes and excluding others. And, you know, there's a lot written about this. There's, I would estimate, probably a third of the 600-page textbook addresses the subject of the special love relationship, which it says basically directly goes against the laws of the universe. And so there's one interpretation of this that Of Course in Miracles is, in effect, advocating a polyamorous position. That, again, could be discussed, you know, using a diversity of references. But I have to say that in this moment of discovery, and I forgot to cast a chart to commemorate the moment of astrology when that happens. Let me do that right this very moment with Leo rising and the moon in Cancer. It is basically yet another anti-sex treatise. It is another assertion by religious authority that sex serves no productive purpose other than reproduction. This is obviously not the position of any sacred sexuality teaching or tantric teaching. Rather, the contrary is held to be true, that sex is a vital connecting point to existence, and that it is a vehicle through which many states of consciousness and states of relationship can be explored and experienced. But I have to say, I am in a moment of revelation and somewhat stunned at the moment and kind of don't know what to say. I've summoned the mentors to have this discussion more thoroughly, and the investigative reporter in me has been piqued, and I think I might have to read this whole fucking 2,000-page typescript and dig out what is in there, and it will certainly contribute handsomely to the Miracle Hour, should that ever manifest as a program. And I was actually planning on starting it next week once Mercury goes direct. I'm not going to make that decision right now in the next 5 minutes. Okay, so the back to our program. And please write to me about this if you have, if I've said anything that rings with you or pisses you off or anything about this Course in Miracles thing, efc@ericfrancis.com. And I'd be happy to share the address of the PDF of the unrevised manuscript, which is easy enough to search for the subject because you can, it's a computer. Nice thing about computers. All right, so the artifact I've selected is a actual hunk of the Temple of the Virgin in Rome. I'm not supposed to have it. It was given to me by a therapist I worked with and studied with in Seattle, a guy named Dave, whose then wife was visiting the Temple of the Virgin in Rome. This is the Temple of the Vestal Virgins, that is to say the headquarters of and their official temple. And a piece of ancient tile fell off the wall. And I guess she saw it there and picked it up and put it in her pocket and took it home and eventually gave it to the guy who became my therapist out on the West Coast and then later Hakomi therapy trainer. And when he found out the depth of my relationship to Vesta and my many direct experiences with this energy and my kind of devotion, he gave me this piece of the Temple of the Virgin. I am keenly aware that you could say I'm supposed to have it because of my direct relationship. It is, however, an historic artifact, and my intention is to make a trip to Rome someday and put it back where it belongs, and hopefully someone will glue it back onto the wall. Who knows, maybe I'll even find the place where it fell off the wall, unless that place has already been repaired. In any event, this has made it into your photograph, and there you have it. That's where it came from, and the crazy thing about this is that this piece of history, this actual artifact, has heard the vibrations of the voices of the Vestal Virgins. Perhaps all of them, or most of them, certainly many of them, have walked past it, maybe touched it. And if you believe that these physical objects contain information, well, it's something. Maybe I'll sleep with it under my pillow tonight and see. I have not done that. Okay, so your runes are kind of really cool. There are five. I read them from left to right. Sorry, that's right to left, backwards, Hebrew style, runic style, and so I drew them in this order. Usually, I read them in the order that I draw them, and I'm drawing them in the order that's suggested for reading an alphabet that reads backwards from what ours does. And the first rune to come out of the bowl, using kind of a bowl with a bandana in it and shaking it up and not looking when I pick, is Berkana, breakthrough, or breakthrough, transformation day. It is the one that is shaped like a little butterfly, and it is certainly beginning with a very happy bang. It is suggesting that you are at a moment of actual breakthrough and of transcendence, and the certainly fits the pattern that I'm seeing in the astrology. Your astrology is very much descriptive of an ongoing series of breakthroughs, and in a sense, what you might think of liberation of yourself from your self-concept and the ability to stand in the clear as who you are. I think that, referencing the astrology for a second, the 12th house placement of Aries is particularly challenging, but what it does is it keeps you searching. It keeps you on a quest for yourself. Maybe if I ever wrote a chapter describing and explaining Taurus per se, I would talk about that one fact above all else. And now there is so much going on that is so unusual and rare, and which will not happen again in potentially many centuries. The ordinary computers do not go far enough into the future to be able to calculate the next Uranus conjunct Eris in Aries. Eris will not be back in Aries for another 500 years, and when it is, well, no, because it stays in Aries for more than a century, it is certain that the next time it is there will be a Uranus-Eris conjunction in Aries, because it's there long enough. So we're talking about an event that is not going to occur again for 500 more years. That's a long time, and that is an indication that this is special and will get some results, and especially if you are working harmoniously with these vibes rather than at cross purposes to them. And remember that this is really about discovering and relating fully in a direct way to who you are, so that you may be yourself and do what you do and relate to people as yourself, and not have to pretend to be anyone else but yourself. Not pretend to be yourself, but actually be. Okay, second So breakthrough, transformation, day, to begin the story here, to begin the runic formula that we're working with. Next, Ansu's is the little antenna. It's like an F, but it's also potentially rearrangeable into an A. You can see, just move it around a little bit, and you get the letter A. So it potentially proto letter A, but it's Ansu's. And this is the rune of signals, of communication, of receiving messages and receiving gifts, and including receiving cautionary notices as a gift. Right, so if someone warns you about something, turns out that warning helps you, consider that warning to be a gift. Meanwhile, we also get a rune that's associated with the god Loki, who is the version of Mercury, the trickster god, but also a god associated with buying and selling. So this is included in this rune. So there's the, you know, the transactional level of this rune, so communication and transacting money are related. And it also, at least Ralph Blum, references the Heyoka tradition of spoofing, of satire, of being a bit of a trickster and keeping your sense of humor. I've personally found and practiced that satire and parody and pranking are a vital part of my, let's say, literary spiritual path, because they encourage us to stay awake and to question everything that we're reading, hearing, and listening to. And there is a gift for you in this, and to remember that there's Native American traditions, including the Lakota tradition, that would use pranking and you know, spoofing, kind of elaborate jokes, as a central means of spiritual advancement. So, you know, keep your sense of humor on. Third position, central position, the action, wunjo, joy, happiness. This is on one level explanatory in its own, but then on another level, it's being suggested here as a path of action, as a course of action, not as a goal. In other words, the goal here is not to be happy. Rather, the path of action suggested is the path of happiness. Kind of cool. Okay, so next position, in fourth position, and that's the position of what must be given up. And this always presents a riddle, because there's an exchange process that's indicated, and sometimes the kind of what you might call the affirmative way to interpret the runes and tarot cards also, which I kind of grew out of my rune reading, presents a bit of a paradox. And so the quote unquote thing which must be given up is relationship. That X is the journey of relationship. And this is not to me saying you must give up relationship so much as either not have that be your primary goal, which it is for many people, and it can be a very distracting goal, because it really, as with happiness, needs to be a vehicle rather than an objective, right? And so, but I'm also seeing this as an exchange of one idea of relationship for another idea of relationship, and also as a reminder that it is necessary to stand apart from relational partners and your whole idea of relationship, such that you are able to maintain your perspective and maintain your independence. And again, this is not saying, oh, you've got to give up the people in your life, as much as that I think it's saying, notice how you observe them. Notice how you consider them to be. Notice who you say they are, basically, to you, and what they represent to you. And I would encourage you to make sure that you are serious about being your own person and relating to others as a whole person, as an individual, rather than the thing that we typically do, which is we relate to others as, the old expression goes, my other half. Final rune, Uruz, strength. This is another rune of protection. We're seeing a lot of these runes of protection come up, and it is saying that basically the outcome of this path of travel, this path of action, is your becoming a strong, self-reliant individual who is then strong enough to share your strength with others when called upon to do so by whatever it is that you feel calls upon you to do so. So an interesting, happy, slightly paradoxical reading, given that the rune of relationship is in this position of what must really be seriously considered. And I would say that as part of the tantric journey that you appear to be on, which is to say gaining the understanding of the erotic impulse containing a cosmic impulse, that there is I would agree on one level that it is in parallel to the desire to heal and the miracle impulse, but that there's much more to it than simply being procreative. Certainly, there is a procreative factor to sex, and there is a creative factor to sex, and there is a relational factor, and there is a self-relational factor. And I would say that the journey of conscious sexuality that is left in its connection with the beauty of existence affirms all of this. And I am curious to see where you go with this. I would love to hear from you. I am getting the guidance to proceed on the path of tantric teaching, which is something that I have done in certain ways, but not in others. But to be more assertive and bold about this, having now spent about 20 years investigating this and kind of doing what I call going in through the side door, like I kind of feel like I picked a lock of the side door of Tantra rather than, you know, engaged on a formal path of study. I seem to, through Book of Blue, have stumbled into a kind of a body of teachings and revelations that have kind of taught me quite a bit. And it may very well be time to pass them on in an astrological context. All right. With this, for the moment, I leave you. Looking forward to our next communication. And I will leave you with the music I've chosen for part one. That was a piece called Bubbling. And when I heard that word come out of my mouth doing the reading, was not in the script because there isn't one, I thought, let's use the piece Bubbling. And I'm going to pick something else, something a little more earthy, perhaps something from the Earth series that we did. We did an Earth series, and now we are up to the second Earth sign. So let's get some of that music in the Earth series in. And the bass that I believe you hear being played is being played by our friend Daniel Grimsland. All right. Big love. Stay in touch. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.